Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Institute for Policy Innovation podcast. We're coming to you today from the studios of Salem Media Group in Dallas, Texas. I'm Tom Giovanetti, president of the Institute for Policy Innovation. Today is November 13th, 2023, and I'm joined as usual in studio by IPI's resident scholar, Dr. Merrill Matthews. And today, Dr. Matthews, we want to talk about how there are apparently no limits to the Biden administration's FTC power grabs. So we're going to talk about the FTC. FTC stands for the Federal Trade Commission. And the Federal Trade Commission is one of these administrative agencies in the executive branch. They are tasked with making sure that consumers are not harmed in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So the FTC makes sure that people are not falsely advertising products. The FTC makes sure that the information that consumers get on the labeling of a product is accurate. But the FTC also has the ability to pursue companies in the marketplace if they are behaving in an anti-competitive behavior. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the area of law called antitrust, where if a company is over-leveraging their market power, if they're big and powerful enough that consumers are being harmed, there's really two parts of the federal government executive branch that come into play. There's the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and then there's the Justice Department. Mm-hmm. And they both have what's called antitrust authority. Really, for about the past 40 years, the FTC has taken pretty much a handoff approach on that sort of thing, on antitrust. Mm-hmm. The whole idea was that what we call the consumer welfare standard, that as long as consumers are not being harmed, we don't really care if a company gains a lot of market power. But that has really changed under the Biden administration.
And the new head of the FTC.
Lina Khan. Now, just as a little bit more background, I think this is an important point for us to hit. And that is that if you go back to like the 2016 election, there were a lot of us who tend to vote Republican. There are a lot of us who are conservatives who were not particularly thrilled with the choice of Donald Trump mm-hmm. as our nominee. But as I told any number of people, both personally and on media interviews and radio interviews and things like that, when you're voting for a president, you're not just voting for one person. You're not just choosing right. one person over another person, because presidents appoint something like 3,500 people yes. to the bureaucracy. And so when you're voting for president, you're really, I think the way you should think about it is, which of these teams do I want in charge? And whatever Donald Trump's flaws, I knew I was going to be far more happy with Donald Trump's team than I was going to be with Hillary Clinton's team. Mm-hmm. Okay. And now I might have been more happy with Ted Cruz's team than Donald Trump's team, but that's not the choice I was given. And so then you go to the 2020 election, and it's sort of the same thing. I mean, Trump's obviously a problem in a number of areas, but whose team would I prefer to have control over the levers of power, Donald Trump's team or Joe Biden's team? Well, we got Joe Biden's team. And when we start talking about these administrative agencies going sort of power mad and engaging in power grabs, it's a perfect illustration of what I meant, that I'd rather have one team in place than the other. So what we ended up with is Joe Biden's team. And there's a lot of these administrative agencies that actually the law actually gives them very, very wide purview. Mm-hmm. And they can choose to forbear, they can choose to have a light touch, or they can choose to just go after it. And Joe Biden's appointment to the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan, is a progressive left activist academic who has never held a job in the business world at all. She's mm-hmm. purely an academic leftist. And by appointing her to the Federal Trade Commission, she has engaged, she has fully expressed all of the power given to the FTC in law and then some. Mm-hmm. So she's been very aggressive in using the FTC to go after companies on antitrust grounds. She right now, they're going after Amazon. They're going after Google. They're going after some non-tech companies. And the main thing we want to talk about today is the fact that Lina Khan has announced that there's something around 100 drugs that the FTC is now going after suing because the drugs were not properly listed mm-hmm. in the Orange Book, which is sort of the Orange Book is like the list of all you know, patented and available drugs and all that sort of thing. And specifically, the accusation is by the FTC is that consumers are having to pay for more of these drugs because of what is often referred to as the patent thicket. Mm-hmm. Okay. And because we do a lot of work here at IPI on intellectual property, we've encountered this idea of the patent thicket before. And here's the argument. The argument is, okay, fine. You've got a patent on a molecule, okay? And we're going to give you, you know, 20 years patent protection on that. But then what the drug company does is they, instead of just having a patent on the actual molecule, they will also patent the delivery mechanism. So maybe it's delivered through injection, or maybe it's delivered through some oral design that is designed to slowly dissolve, mm-hmm. right? Or maybe there's a particular It could be a nasal inhaler, exactly. It could be an oral inhaler. It could be a nasal inhaler. It could literally be a type of packaging that will only dispense like one pill at a time, so you can't overdose or whatever. And so the drug companies will establish patents on all of those things too. And so the accusation has been, you drug companies are trying to get more than you're entitled to as far as patent protection. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get more than just the 20 years patent protection because you filed all these other patents. And that's what's referred to by critics as a patent thicket.
And I'll add, because of some of the delivery mechanisms here, but also sometimes a drug will be, the first iteration of the drug will be taken twice a day. And then it turns out that they've worked through this and found a way that they could do it once a day. It's also true that they could end up finding a way to, if it had been an injection, and now they're going to turn around and make it a pill. So right. It's easy. So there's various ways that you can take this drug, and make an incremental improvement to the drug itself mm-hmm. and end up extending the patent.
Now, if you are of a mind that you just hate drug companies that hate patents, you think all of this is nefarious, mm-hmm. right? You think there's no good reason for any of this, okay? You know, for us, for those at IPI and for other folks who appreciate innovation and that sort of a thing, we see all of these things as incremental improvements and incremental innovations. And if, in fact, you do find a way to improve a drug, or if you find a way to improve the delivery of a drug, or if you find a way to be safer with a drug, there's no reason why those incremental innovations should not also be patented. Mm-hmm. And so the phrase patent thicket comes with lots and lots of negative connotations. But the real question is, are those legitimate patents?
Right.
Is that a legitimate innovation, right? So patent critics have been complaining about this for decades, this idea of a patent thicket. And you're trying to establish a defensive wall around the original patent with all of this stuff. Here's the thing, though. Critics of this strategy, critics of this idea of all these incremental innovations, have been consistently losing in the courts. Mm-hmm. And the real reason that Lina Khan right now is trying to use FTC's administrative power to go after this is that they just keep losing in the courts.
Right.
In fact, in the middle of last year, in August of 2022, there was a huge lawsuit where the mayor and city council of Baltimore sued AbbVie. AbbVie is one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the country, in the world. And it was for Humira, which is this drug that treats arthritis and various mm-hmm. kind of inflammation diseases. And so the argument in this legal case was that AbbVie was protecting Humira with this thicket of patents, you know, with dozens of other patents that were all related to it. And it went up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit found in favor of AbbVie. Said that all of these patents, they're legitimate patents, mm-hmm. and that the existence of a number of patents is not enough evidence to be an antitrust violation. Mm-hmm. And so that was the big case. The big case was, can we get a court to find against this idea of patent thickets? And in any number of cases, the courts have said no. So if you are a skeptic, if you're a critic of drug patents, if you think that, you know, drug companies are evil because they make these wonderful products and then they try to protect them. The courts have not looked favorably upon your arguments.
And, you know, one of the things you said earlier on, I want to emphasize that, because what we're talking about is them using administrative power to try to do what they can't do through legislation or other things. And the you said administrative, using all their power and then some.
Yeah.
And it's the and then some that's really getting that the Biden administration has started to do. several of the agencies have said, we're going to go out and we're going to try to do this or that. And we may not have the power to do that. We will claim we have the power. But when the courts come back and said, no, you don't really have the legislative authority to do that, then they've turned around and said, well, we'll just look for another way to go out and do this.
That's exactly right.
So they've just essentially tried to do this by autocratic fiat rather than what do we have the power? What has Congress given us the power to do?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think there's two pieces to your point that you're making. The first piece is that it is literally we're now doing this at the administrative level because the courts have consistently found against mm-hmm. us, right? So there's very much sort of a brute force. If we can't get legislation, if we can't get our will through the legislative branch, if we can't get our will through the judicial branch, then we'll just try to use the power of the executive branch to try to do that, right? So it's kind of a by any means necessary kind of thing. But here's what's really interesting. We already have an FDA, okay? Mm-hmm. A Federal Food and Drug Administration, okay? So they're the ones who approve drugs. They're the ones who decide whether or not a drug is helpful or harmful and should be on the market at all. We already have a USPTO. We already have a patent office that decides whether or not an innovation is legitimately worth a patent. Mm-hmm. At the USPTO, there's a process called the PTAB process where you can challenge a patent. If you think a patent was wrongly awarded, you can go to this essentially appeals court function within the patent office.
Right.
And the PTAB, this sort of appeal function within the patent office, has overturned like 87% of the patents that were brought to it. Mm-hmm. So the PTAB process is very much inclined toward overturning patents. So we already have all of these processes. And now what's going on is this, I would argue, not just an executive branch power grab, but an illegitimate power grab by the FTC, that mm-hmm. it's not within their purview to decide whether a patent is a legitimate patent. It's not within their purview to decide what are the regulations that should apply to a drug as it moves through the approval process. That is simply not within FTC's wheelhouse, mm-hmm. but that is not stopping Lena Khan. Because as you point out, the sort of progressive left philosophy is always try to expand the boundaries of your power. Don't hesitate. Just because somebody says something's unconstitutional or just because somebody says something is a violation of the Administrative Procedures Act, don't let that stop you. You know, go ahead and push. And so you could, because it's for them, it's like a win-win, right? Because if they lose, well, you know, who cares? The taxpayers paid for it. Mm-hmm. The taxpayers paid all the legal costs. And if you lose, you can still go back and tell the voters, well, we tried.
Right.
You know,
and in the process of doing this, you're going out and making very bold claims about what groups are doing and how bad they are and how the Biden administration is out there to help people.
Yeah. So, you know, this is essentially just to nerd out for a second. This is part of the difference in the conservative mentality and the progressive mentality, right? The conservative approach to law and policy is you work from an assumption that we have to stay within the bounds of the law and the Constitution, mm-hmm. right? And if there's a piece of legislation that creates the FTC and allocates powers to it, that you have to stay within that, right? If you're the EPA and you're only allowed to regulate pollutants, the conservative approach is, well, we're just going to restrict ourselves to pollutants. If you're a progressive leftist, you don't let that stop you. You say, well, we're just going to declare that carbon dioxide is a pollutant, right? Even though that's not in the legislation. And if you're at the FTA, if you're at the FTC with Lena Khan, you say, you know what? We're going to go ahead and try to get out there and regulate drug patents, even though that's not within our purview, even though there are two other federal agencies, three actually, if you include the Department of Justice, that actually are frankly better equipped to deal with those kinds of questions.
And she may end up losing at the court level, but nobody pays attention to what they lost. I mean, that's a headline in the newspaper, and nobody knows anything about it.
So I think their attitude is nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Right.
You know, make the power grab, do the overreach, and if you lose, you lose.
Do the marketing and try to get the benefits from voters by saying, I'm doing something. And then when you fail, nobody knows.
If you win, then that's great. You've gained more power. And if you lose, well, nobody pays any attention. And you can tell people that we tried.
Right.
You know, so elect us again. So this is the, I think there's really two, you know, for us as sort of policy nerds, I think there's two interesting lessons here. And that is that your political philosophy really does matter.
Mm-hmm.
It really does matter. If the conservatives feel bound and limited within the four walls of the Constitution, within the four corners of the Constitution, and within law, and if we don't like the law, then we seek to change it. And if we succeed in changing it, that's fine. If we don't manage to change it, then we're kind of stuck. That's mm-hmm. that's the conservative approach to policy. That there are limiting factors. There's limitations. Progressives are not at all hindered by the fact that there are limitations in law and the Constitution. They're always looking to gain as much power as possible, to push the limits. And if they succeed, they succeed. And if they fail, well, we'll come again and try again another right. time. So that, I think, is one important lesson from this. And the second important lesson to this, I think, really does go toward the idea of voting. And we treat elections too often like personality contests, like, you know, like your high school senior class voting for who's most likely to succeed, mm-hmm. you know, or who's best looking or whatever, who's most popular. Too many times, I think elections are like that. And I think when you're voting as a fully informed voter, you need to be thinking in terms of if my vote puts a certain philosophy into power, am I going to be happy with the results?
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't at IPI endorse candidates. We don't suggest that people vote for particular candidates or for particular parties. But you do have to bear in mind that when you are voting for president, you're not just voting for one person over another person.
Voting for a team.
You're voting for a team, a big team, like 3,500 people, and you're voting for is the, you know, are we going to put radical ideologues at the heads of these various administrative agencies or not? And many, many times we find out that Congress has given wide berths to a lot of these administrative agencies. And if they choose to fully exercise the power that they're given in legislation, they can really have an impact on the amount of regulations that private companies have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are two really important lessons. And I think the third important thing, folks who are listening to this who are interested in intellectual property, is that the patent thicket argument, for the most part, is a bogus argument. If those patents were issued, they were issued because they'd represented a true incremental improvement. And we want incremental improvements. We want incremental innovations. Most innovation in the world is not like eureka. They're not eureka moments, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like you left a piece of bread out on the counter when you went home from the lab last night and you come back the next morning and penicillin's growing on it. I mean, most innovation is not like that. Most innovation is small incremental improvements. We have found a way to make batteries 15% more efficient. You know what I mean? We have found a way to make that anti-allergy drug easier to take or last longer. You don't have to take three a day now. Now you only have to take one a day.
And, you know, with your cell phone, iPhone started out fairly basic.
Mm-hmm.
But every couple of years, they changed and did some incremental changes. And
That's
now
right.
you've got much better phones with much better cameras, many more functions and things that you can do with it.
It can be as simple as a childproof cap on a bottle of drugs that is easier for an adult to remove but harder than a child to remove. I remember when they first went to these childproof caps, it's like none of us could get them open.
Adults couldn't get them open.
Adults couldn't get them open, you know. But incremental innovation is probably 95% of all innovation. And so the fact that the drug maker has actually filed for a way that you could administer that drug in a way that's less painful
mm-hmm.
or less complicated or less onerous. If they have found a way to, instead of something being injectable, to being a pill that you can swallow, those are significant incremental innovations. And it is true innovation. It's worthy of patent protection. At some fundamental level, people have to come to terms with the fact that if innovation is not profitable, people are not going to innovate.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to allow businesses, not just drug companies, but certainly drug companies, you have to allow them when they put out millions and billions of dollars to develop new products and new molecules and new ways of administering drugs. Why is it wrong somehow for them to profit for that for the limited amount of time that the patent lasts? As I think back right now on the various drugs that I take right now, I think every drug that I take right now on a regular basis is a generic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 10 years ago, I think two of them would have been brand name drugs. They would have been expensive. They would have been covered by patent. But I think you fast forward 10 years and now everything, I'm taking all the same medicines, but they're all generic now. So they cost me little or nothing. That's an improvement. That's an improvement. So don't, when you hear the phrase patent thicket, don't automatically assume that it's a problem, but you should probably automatically assume that the person you're hearing it from is a critic of patent protection. Well, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Institute for Policy Innovation podcast. If you'd like to know more about patent protection or innovation or intellectual property, we would invite you to check out our website at ipi.org, where you can sign up to receive notices of all of our new podcasts, new content, and upcoming events. If you've enjoyed this podcast, share it with your friends, and also consider giving us a favorable review on iTunes or on your favorite podcast platform. And as we approach the end of the year, you can also consider helping to sponsor these podcasts by becoming a member of IPI's Giving Society, which we would very much appreciate. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.